Time Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, since somebody emailed or tweeted in about, is it called the Pick and Troll Podcast? That's all I hear now when I say it and when I listen to it.
Pick Control?
Pick Control. They asked if it was the Pick Control Podcast.
Well, I'm from Arkansas, so I can tell you about the Pick Control. Let me tell you, them pigs.
Let me tell you about them playoffs.
Let's talk some playoffs.
Let's talk some Eastern Conference playoffs, and then we might split this into two pods. So this may be a really awkward intro. We're not quite sure how long we're going to go, but let's talk about the East playoffs. Should we just start 1-8 and work our way in, or do you want to go 4-5 and work our way out?
Let's start on the outside and slowly ease inside, driving deeper and deeper until we get to the very core, and then pull out quickly.
I am uncomfortable. I am very uncomfortable.
I don't know what you're referring to, sir.
We're talking playoff sex. Let's... All right, the 1-8 series. This is already going so poorly. The 1-8 series is the amazing Atlanta Hawks against the... look at those Brooklyn Nets.
The congratulations you got in by losing in typical Eastern Conference fashion.
Man, that's the thing. I'm writing the preview for Hawks Nets, and I've honestly tried to find angles in which the Nets could not even provide the upset, but provide a challenge. And I think there's talent on this Nets team. I just don't think there's enough talent, and I don't like the way they play. Like, even if Brook Lopez is a monster in this series, this team just doesn't have the firepower to hang with them unless, like, you know, 2011 or 2012 Deron Williams comes back and, like, 2013 Joe Johnson comes back. Like, I just don't see it.
They need to grind it out. They need to grind it to dust. They need to play it to the bone, because what they need is they need to apply pressure in full court in order to get the Hawks low in the shot clock and try and encourage, like, single movement possessions for Atlanta. Don't get them whipping the ball around. Don't let them do anything complicated. And then on the other end, they just need to hammer them with Joe Johnson post-ups, Brook Lopez post-ups, crash the offensive glass, and come up with a few big threes from Bogdanovich and Deron. That's got to be, like, the formula. It's got to be, like, irritatingly deliberate basketball.
Well, here's the stat for you. The Nets shot, I believe, 10% from 3-point range worse than the Hawks in their 4-game series this year. They couldn't keep up from 3-point shooting. They shot 31%. I think the Hawks shot 41%. And in games where the Nets shot below league average, which is 35%, below league average on 3-point shooting, they were 15-31. Oof. So if they don't hit threes, they don't get D's wins.
Oh, man. I mean, it's tough. Like, I'm with you. Like, I think the Hawks are way better than everybody expects. But, you know, if I look at it and I ask myself, like, how are they going to win? Atlanta does have problems with big lineups. They have lots of problems with big lineups. And a Plumlee Lopez combo is a lot of size for Horford and Millsap to deal with. And then beyond that, do the Hawks have anybody that can guard Joe Johnson in the post?
Damari Carroll. I know he's a little bit smaller, but I think Damari Carroll can check Joe Johnson pretty well. And you know me, I'm a Joe Johnson guy.
Yeah.
I think Damari's that good.
You know, I mean, the dual point guard lineup with Deron and Jarrett Jack, I hate. I don't like that matchup with Teague and anybody, Schroeder or Carroll or whoever. But I mean, it's tough. I don't have a great response for how this is going to go. You know, I don't have a great feel for how we can expect Brooklyn to hang in the series. I want to say that it's going to be a sweep because they're just way, way better than them.
Yeah, I mean, all right, if you go big with Lopez, Plumlee, Thad, Joe, Deron, I mean, it's not a bad lineup. It's just, like, can you hurt them? Can you hurt them offensively? I guess if you crash, like, if you dominate the offensive boards, you can, you know, keep things alive and maybe get to the free throw line, and if you get them in foul trouble, you can make things work, but I mean, I just don't think there's a lot of firepower there.
I've got Brooklyn, or I've got the Hawks taking it in a gentleman's sweep. Five games, I think. I could see Atlanta winning the first three, dropping the fourth, and then closing it out at home.
You talked about the dual point guard lineup for the Nets.
Yeah.
It was not great this year.
It was awful. That was like the thing that the beat writers were all like, why are you playing this lineup when everything shows, eye test and numbers show this thing's terrible? And Lionel was just like, nope!
They were minus 10.3 per 100 possessions playing Darren and Jarrett Jack together.
And Lionel's playing the, oh, they're much better than us card, which is what Mark Jackson did to George Karl a couple years back. Except that, like, Lionel's doing it in typically too hard version. I'm like, we have no chance. We're not very good, and they're very good.
I mean, I agree.
Lionel may also just be being honest, because it is not beyond Lionel to just be like, we're not very good. Yeah. We shouldn't even be here. Because they shouldn't be. Like, they are in the playoffs because Paul George got hurt, and because the Pacers played, because the Wizards decided to play a double overtime game versus the Pacers. Like, I also think if the Pacers had come in rested, they probably could have taken it from Memphis, because Memphis was like, yeah, we'll win. But Memphis wasn't like, we must get the five.
Yeah, I've got this as a sweep. The Nets handled them all year. The one game that ended up being close, it took a big fourth quarter comeback. And I think both those games were without Paul Millsap, the final two games between these two teams. And so, if Millsap's healthy, even if Millsap's not healthy, I just don't think they can keep up with the Hawks. The Hawks are too good.
I mean, Bogdanovich, I guess, is your hope that he just, like, goes supernova?
Yeah, I mean, maybe if they had, like, Teletovich in there, it'd be one more guy that can just get crazy hot and win you a quarter, right?
Yeah.
And maybe if you have enough of those guys, you can get enough semblance. But, I mean, you just can't convince me that Darren Williams and Jarrett Jack are going to take down this team.
Remember when Jarrett Jack was, like, a key player for the Warriors? Like, a key part of the Warriors?
He was a very key player. He was great for them in the regular season. And in the playoffs, he was kind of detrimental.
And the 47 minutes of which Pero Antich plays this season, the Hawks were plus 52.8.
All right.
In the 116 minutes Korver played, they were plus 27.2. The only players with negative point differentials versus the Nets were Elton Brand, who played 26 minutes, and John Jenkins, who played 11. Yeah, I mean, it's... Again, all I can say is if the Nets are able to grind this thing down into a very playoff-esque, Eastern Conference playoff-esque type game, and they just hammer over and over and over again with Joe Johnson, if they had just a little bit better defense, I would be engaged, but none of these guys ever seem to give a damn game to game. And the other thing is, if the Hawks go on a run, it's over. Like, if the Hawks go on a 12-0 run, Brooklyn will quit. They will just be like, all right, let's just finish this out and we'll get to the next game. Better luck next. Like, they have no fight in them. And this has been their M.O. the last 3 years. Hey, they have no fight.
Paul Pierce agrees,
you know? And it was really cool to hear that, right? To see this thing that we all kind of thought. Because everyone's like, why are you playing, like, psychologist when you're not there? And it's like, you can see things. Like, they do. They just quit. They give up. They do not have – there is no leader to say, no, we are not going down like this. There is not that guy. Darren Williams is supposed to be that guy, and he's not. He never should have left Utah, ever.
I'm trying to look at a matchup advantage that the Nets have. Teague's better than Darren Williams. Korver has been better than Joe Johnson this year. I guess who's their small forward? Bogdanovich?
Yeah.
Is he going to start for the – like, let's say it's Bogdanovich. Like, give me Damari Carroll any day. Paul Millsap's much better than Thad Young, and Horford's better than Brook Lopez.
It's just size. Again, that's all I can get to is I started looking at combos where, like, one, the Hawks are really soft in offensive rebounding. That's a weak point of what they do.
Yeah.
And the Hawks do give up, I think they give – I'll have to look this up. They give up what I think is a lot of threes defensively, which is not a great margin. Yeah, they're 30th in opponent three-point attempts per game. Now – they're seventh in defend in terms of percentage.
Right, they defend it well.
But in the playoffs, giving up a lot of threes is dangerous. So if you look at it from that perspective and you say, okay, well, they've got Darren Williams, they've got Jarrett Jack, they've got Bogdanovich, they have guys that can hit from the outside, And if their other weakness is, well, they struggle on the defensive glass, and you've got Mason Plumlee and Brook Lopez.
I mean, here's the thing, though. The Nets, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The Nets give up the 8th highest percentage from the 3-point range.
That's not good.
Against a Hawks team that's kind of a flamethrower.
And the Nets are 23rd in offensive rebound rate.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, like, Brook Lopez has been a different rebounder, especially on the offensive end, since the All-Star break, right? So maybe he's turned this corner under Lionel Hollins to where he is a force that you can rely on offensive rebounding. So then maybe that comes into play more. But I don't know. The Hawks are just better. They're way better.
Yeah, they should dominate.
So let's move on. You've got them in 5. I've got them in 4.
Yeah, let's move on. I've got them in 5. I'll say they get a game.
So this one, this will be interesting to follow on Twitter. The 2-seeded Cleveland Cavaliers against the 7-seed Boston Celtics. There's a lot of talk going on between the Boston fans and between the Cleveland fans right now. And we know both are very reasonable fan bases.
Yeah, this is not going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of ugliness in this one. It's going to be... these two teams hate each other. I mean, it's LeBron versus I'm glad that the Celtics are back and they get to face LeBron again. Because it just gets them excited. If they were going to face, like, Atlanta, they would probably think that they have a better shot. But they would also just be sadder.
Right.
So, it's interesting. I'm curious how this is going to go. I'm putting a lot of faith in Cleveland here, actually. I've got the Cavs sweeping this one.
I think I have a sweep as well.
Yeah, we both have Cavs in 4.
Yeah, I do think it will be 4 competitive games. I just think that there's not... I mean, I think I saw some stat where with Love, Kyrie, and LeBron on the floor against Boston this year, they just annihilated the Celtics. And maybe that's unfair because the Celtics team has had so many different combinations throughout the year. Like, they had a bunch of injuries, they had trades, they came together, down the stretch of the season. So I'm not sure that that number really matters because this is a different Celtics team than probably a couple of times that they played. But there just seems to be too much talent on one side.
That's where I keep getting to is I just look at it and I'm like, who's going to make plays for the Celtics? And the answer is it's Isaiah Thomas, but with Mozgov underneath, that's a big dude for a short dude to go against.
Yeah.
And I think, the hope is that Jay Crowder is the one that does the work on LeBron, and that's not a good idea. I mean, they don't have any other options, right? But
I like Jay Crowder.
Me too.
I don't see how he's going to contain LeBron.
I mean, he can't. And I think the best way to play him, honestly, is to say LeBron can get 40. We got to not let J.R. Smith shoot threes. And we've got to not let them kill us on the inside. But the Celtics don't have great rim protection. I like Tyler Zeller as a guy that can guard the rim a little bit. I think he's underrated. But the Celtics fans are adamant that they don't have a rim protector. And it's weird because I'll say that, and I'm like, so you're going to get killed. And they're like, no, 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 we have a chance. And if you can't protect the rim, you are doomed. Because Kyrie will get there all day.
Right.
All day. I guess, so you put Marcus Smart on Kyrie.
I mean, you can swap between him and Avery Bradley, right? And that's a nice combination. Like, Kyrie's still better than both those guys, but that's a nice duo to be able to switch off and throw a bunch of stuff at Kyrie to make him work.
Right. And then the other guard will take J.R. Smith, and I think you're okay with that. Like, it'll be interesting to see, can Isaiah check JR? Can he get in his line of sight enough to bother him?
No.
No. So that's the thing. Isaiah Thomas is their best overall player, but he's like their sixth man coming off the bench, and he can't defend JR. There's no way to hide him. You can't hide him at all.
It's, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, even if you slow down LeBron and Kyrie, that means you have to let JR get loose. And I think JR's proven that when he gets loose on this team, he's an incredible weapon.
And, I mean, we both know that Kevin Love's going to get a ton of post touches and be used heavily and just destroy Kelly Olynyk. Oh, that's funny. Oh, I kill me. Oh, Kevin Love getting the ball. Hilarious.
Because they do have a smaller front line, the Celtics, I wonder if there's like a over... I wonder if there's a bet between, like, Kevin Love post-ups versus Timofey Mozgov post-ups.
That'd be great. That would be a great one.
That might be something to track. I could see Mozgov getting more post-ups in this series.
Now, to be fair, Love has been involved much more in the offense as of late, but it'll still, I think, be very interesting to see like how that goes, because Love should kill him. Love should murder Kelly Olynyk. I mean, just destroy him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if they don't, then, well, you know, it'll be the same stuff that we've seen over the last however many months. By the way, we didn't cover this real quick. The Hawks are minus 1,100 to win their series. The Nets are only plus 750.
That's insane.
For comparison, the Cavs are minus 4,000, Celtics plus 2,000.
Ooh, that's a big disparity. I mean, that's just the public betting LeBron, right?
It's a lot of that, but it's also nobody believes in the Hawks. Yeah. Nobody believes in the Hawks.
Man.
I know.
I mean, I'm fine if you want to question them against the Cavs or even the Bulls.
I'm like, how much do I have to bet on minus 1,100 to pull profit? I tried to do that in my head.
To make it worth it.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, I think Boston's going to get hurt on the inside. I think they're going to get hurt on the perimeter. I'm just not sure that defensively they're ready. They got a lot of young guys. You know, this is the first playoffs for everybody except Brandon Bass and Gerald Wallace, you know? I mean, how many playoff guys – Avery Bradley. Like, how many guys do they have that are playoff ready? Avery Bradley is one guy that could help them a lot, you know?
He could have a big series.
I'm almost tempted to put Marcus Smart on Kyrie and take the bigger guy on Kyrie and have Avery check JR.
Yeah, I think the danger with that is Avery will help.
Yeah.
And I don't think you want to help off JR. Because Avery is such a good, like, you know, come from the weak side and block a shot or dig down and get a steal or play the passing lane, you know. And I think that maybe gives him a little too much freedom to roam. Although, I mean, he'd probably do that against Kyrie, too. And I don't – oh, man. That's a tricky way to use – I mean, I guess the beauty is you can switch them. And that will – you know, you can see which combinations work throughout the game and throughout the series.
Right.
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
This is gonna be. This is one where I want to see how it goes. Like,
Do you think the confidence is coming from these final two games?
No, I think the confidence is coming from how they've played since the All-Star break. Yeah. Most of the confidence is coming from we have Brad Stevens. That's where it's coming from. Like, it's just basically, we have Brad Stevens, and he will figure out a way to lead us to victory. But that's where it comes from. Because, like, there's no... I mean, they've got a huge coaching advantage in my mind. I want to see how David Blatt does in a seven-game series. I am curious to see this. How he adjusts from game to game. But I also just don't know if there's anything that Stevens can do to adjust, because it's like... Well, Tristan Thompson should destroy Jared Sullinger.
Yeah.
Just kill him.
Yeah, that's another thing. Try to look for a matchup advantage that the Celtics have.
The Celtics are a great team in terms of spreading the floor, pace and space, creating threes. But the Cavs aren't a team that you want to get into an offensive game with. You want to try and grind them down and make it into possession by possession. And Boston, I don't think, can do that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing of when you have that huge talent disparity, right? Is you want to slow the game, you want to minimize possessions. That way there's fewer chances for them to kind of exude their dominance. But that's not really that freewheeling for the Celtics. They're a team that likes to play fast.
If they had a great post guy or a great stretch four, I could be talked into this could be competitive. But they are just so overwhelmed in the front court.
Yeah.
You know, like, Mozgov's so much bigger and better than everybody else that they have.
Yeah, I mean, Love too. Even if Love doesn't have a good series, he's still just a matchup advantage that they have to keep track of.
Right.
Man. Yeah. I mean, I could see the Celtics winning a game, especially in Boston.
I can't. I really think that it's going to be. I honestly, when we get past all this, all the matchups and the things that we've talked about, I just think it's going to be in every fourth quarter. I could see it being Celtics hanging around here, only down 9. LeBron James checks back in, and the Cavaliers win 125-101.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I got the Cavs as a sweep, but I do think the Celtics have a real chance at stealing one game in Boston.
So you think they can steal one game? I think the Nets can steal one game. And both of those are going to be done pretty quickly.
And both of us think that the other one's insane in thinking that.
Right.
That's another thing about the Nets. They suck at home.
I mean, I think anybody can steal a game. That's part of it. I think almost anybody can steal a game. I think it's... Sweeps are difficult for the most part. But then it's also like you look at... We should look at both of the records of these two teams. And Boston fans are like, that's not indicative, blah, blah. You're still... You're 5 games under 500 or 4 or however many you are. These are under 500 teams versus 50-plus win teams.
Yeah.
You know, a 61 team in Atlanta. Like, come on. This should not be a matchup. But as I say every... You know, I've been saying this every day. There's always a series that surprises us. And it's just trying to figure out which one that's going to be. Which leads us to our next matchup.
I think it's weird that everyone is starting to think like, oh, this Bucks team. So Bucks Bulls. I think the Bucks. I've got the Bulls in 6. I think the Bucks will be very competitive. I just don't like. They don't have enough offense to win this series.
The Bulls are -750. They're a healthy favorite.
Yeah.
And the Bucks are +550. They're a healthy dog. The problem is just when you start looking at all the context around it, that +550 starts to look nicer and nicer and nicer.
I mean, I guess if you're looking for upsets, and like the 4-5 isn't a real upset, right?
Right.
So if you're looking for upsets, I get it, because this is a you know, a scrappy Bucks team that has played above everyone's expectations, and maybe that's where we get into the trouble with the Celtics too, is because they have exceeded our expectations, we start thinking like, well, maybe we were way too wrong on them. Right?
Yeah.
And then it gets into like, well, let's overcorrect that. And now, like, I can't see a scenario unless, well, that's not true. If the Bulls get injured, the Bucks can take advantage of that big time.
Strong sign here. So for 100 possessions, Dunleavy was +22.5 versus the Bucks. Rose was +18.8 in the 2 meetings. Noah was +14.0 in 3 of the meetings. Butler was +10.2. Snell was +8.2. Then you start to get into some of the reserve guys, and it goes to Taj, who was only 5.9 plus. It's good, but not, you know, I mean, not amazing. Powell was +5.5, which is really surprising because Powell had that monster game versus them, right?
Right.
And actually, the Bulls were better with Powell off court than on. And after that, Heinrich, Brooks, Mirotić, Etuan, McDermott, and Nazi, like the rest of their bench guys, all had negative marks versus the Bucks. So it basically tells you like the starters, and starters are playing more minutes, so that's not exactly a problem. But the bench was kind of an issue for them when they matched up with them this year.
Yeah,
they won 3 of the meetings.
I will say this: the Bucks did really well defending the 3 against Chicago. Mm. Chicago shot 25% in 4 games. 25%.
This is my thing. I still maintain this, despite the fact that the Bulls' offensive numbers are very good this year, I still maintain that much like Memphis, their offense can die at any point. They're that car that just will not start sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. On the flip side of that, though...
Yeah, but if you're the Bucks, it's comforting. You know you can't score.
Right, but you still gotta.
Do you? Or do you just have to make sure the Bulls can?
No, you gotta score. This Bulls team can always go to Powell or Noah or Butler.
Holy. In the one game, I mean, maybe they were resting guys, and I don't know this, but in the one game that they played with Michael Carter-Williams, Carter-Williams was +19.2.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you know?
Let's look at that game.
That had to have been what you guys missing.
Yeah, Butler played, Noah played, Powell played, Dunleavy played, Mirotić played.
So most of the guys with terrible marks in per 100, so Johnny O'Brien doesn't really play all that much at all. Kendall Marshall, Jabari Parker, gone, or out at least. You know, Tyler Ennis was bad, but that's probably garbage time, garbage. Yeah, it was only 16 minutes. Larry Sanders is gone. Brendan Knight's gone. I can't remember if Kenyon Martin's there or not.
That's a good question.
of concern, Chris Middleton. Let's see here. Chris Middleton, -7.2. And Giannis was -0.6. So it was kind of close across four meetings.
Yeah.
The point differential was -7.3 between these two teams. But that's with... I got to remember this. Pau Bucks. Pau dropped 46 on them on January 11th.
Right.
And I watched that game and could not believe it. This is one of those that's interesting because I look at, all right, let's take out what happened and look at, the schematic of the team. And I just say, all right, tough, gritty defensive team with hyper-athleticism versus Bulls team that has penchant for running its players into ground and whose offense can die at any point. The other reason that I tend to lean towards the Bucks making this a series is they, the Bulls let teams hang. They let the Pacers hang in 2011 when that was the best team that they've had in the Rose era, And the Pacers were in every single game. They only went five, but the Pacers gave them hell. And then I forget, 2012 was the injury year, and the Sixers won. And then 2013, who was their first round opponent? That was the Nets year, and that one went seven. And 2014.
Yeah, but 13, they were a mess.
They were.
They were a mess with injuries.
And then what, last year, who was last year? It was the Wizards.
Yeah, and they were a mess with injuries again.
Yeah. They don't, and I know that they're more healthy, but it's also just like they don't necessarily come out and destroy teams in playoff environments.
No, they don't. And that's why I think the Bucks can win two games. It's the Bucks also put up a 91 defense or 91 offensive rating against them this year. Like the Bucks just can't score. That's the thing. I feel like I'm being generous with two games.
Yeah, I mean, look, I didn't pick them. I didn't. I can say all this. I did not take them. Why would I take them? Who would do such a thing? I took them. I think I did six, just like you.
Yeah, and that's, like, they can make two games ugly if Rose isn't Rose. Well, okay, when Rose isn't Rose, and if they can. The other thing is, I just keep looking at, yes, the Bucks are a fantastic defensive team. They've got all that length and athleticism. They don't have that guy who can really body up and get Powell out of his comfort zone.
Zaza.
And then Noah just destroys.
But what about Zaza?
No, I'm saying, but then Noah destroys, and then Zaza got to go back to helping away from Noah and stuff. Like
you let Giannis go on Noah, and then Noah gets ejected.
Jesus.
Giannis has got a little dirty streak in him.
Yeah.
He's got a mean streak.
Yeah, the dirt is his 3-point shot.
Oh! How much of this is your abhorrence for the internet's love of Giannis Antetokounmpo?
That's the thing. I love Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
I feel like I love him properly, though.
I love him in appropriate ways.
Right.
It sounds odd again.
There's a lot of sex in these playoffs, folks.
Yeah, but yeah, Bulls. All right, we both took Bulls and sex. I think that they'll win because I'm too cowardly to take the Bucks. I do think that this could be a matchup, but then again, this one seems obvious, so maybe it won't be. Because again, it's always the surprise one that catches us. And the only ones that would be surprises in the East would be either Hawks, Nets, or Cavs, Celtics. Those are the only two that would surprise us. Because these other two, I think you'd be like. Like, it wouldn't stun the hell out of you if the Bucks made this a series. You'd just be like, the Bulls shot terribly, didn't they?
Yeah, no, and I think that they would shoot terribly because the Bucks are a good defense.
There's also, by the way, a very decent chance that Pau Gasol just annihilates them. Just annihilates them.
That's the thing. I just don't see them. Like, I think Zaza's great. He's going to have to split time between every big that they've got.
If I was a Bucks player, I would just be like, Pau, did you know how many minutes you've played this year? You've played an amazing amount this year, my man. You have played so many minutes. And for you to do that despite your foot injury, amazing.
Since the All-Star break, the Bucks have a 97 offensive rating. They're
total.
That's the thing. Like they just can't score.
I know. If they were facing the Cavs, I would think it would be a sweep. If they were facing the Hawks, I would think it would be a sweep. If they were facing the Raptors, I think the Raptors would probably beat them in five. But if you're going to face one team, if you're like, we need to find a team in the Eastern Conference that can't score. Hello, Chicago.
I don't know. They're not that bad this year.
No, their offensive efficiency is good. It's just It's just that when things go bad for them, they go really, really bad.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, look, we're in the... Well, what do I always get back to? It's the if territory. There's too many ifs to take the Bucks.
Yeah.
But the ifs are not as crazy as if it were in another matchup. Let's talk about the one that is... I am on my island. I went back and forth on it. I really did. I had struggled with this one. But I just finally decided, I was like, you know what? I'm going to look like an idiot. This is going to be another year where I have the worst percentage of all experts in picking games like I was a couple of years ago. But I just can't. I got to stick up for my principles.
Your principles?
Yep. And my principles said that the Toronto Raptors are not a good team.
All right.
Not a good playoff team. They're a good team.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The last 3 months say otherwise. I think I went with the Raptors because of home court advantage.
Yep, you did the, as I described this morning. By the way, whenever you see an expert pick a team in seven, that means I have no idea and I'm probably taking home court.
Yep, that's usually what it means for me.
And Anand has Wizards in seven. He's with me, only I have in fewer. James, of course, has the Raptors. I think he has them in like five, six. He has them in six. I've got Wizards in seven. And you've got Raptors in seven. Ken's got Raptors in seven.
Yeah. First of all, getting me to care about this series is going to be quite the endeavor.
Oh.
That's bad. Because...
it's got guys you like.
Yeah. It's got a lot of guys I don't.
KLOE.
I love Kyle Lowry. I can't wait to watch him. I can't wait to watch John Wall. I would love to watch Bradley Beal. Pierce. I would love to watch... Yeah, I like Pierce when he was good.
Aww.
I don't want to see some broken down Pierce trying to hobble his way to the elbow jumper. That's not fun. If Randy Whitman had any idea that Bradley Beal is capable of doing stuff with a basketball, I'd love to watch Bradley Beal in this series. I like Gortat. Outside of that, man, this Wizards team just doesn't have anything in terms of offense. And yet... they're going against a Raptors team. It doesn't have anything in terms of defense.
The totally stoppable force versus the extremely movable object.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know where this series goes. I went Raptors in seven because of home court. Also because of my feelings about Randy Whitman.
Yeah, that's what's funny is I think that the Raptors fans think that their coach sucks. And I think they have a coaching advantage in this series.
Yeah.
The Wizards have, by the way, the Wizards have a worse offensive efficiency than the Brooklyn Nets.
Good God.
So that's not promising. But
they're a very good defensive team.
They're a very good defensive team, and the Toronto Raptors they're better than the Nets, but they have a worse defensive efficiency than...
This can't be the measuring stick of they're better than the Nets. This can't be our tool for figuring out if a team's good or not.
That's what's really funny is, like, defensive efficiency, the Pelicans are right above them. The Cavaliers are two spots above them, but of course it's, like, weighted. Not a great, yeah, interesting. The Wizards have veterans, and veterans win in the playoffs. The Wizards are not scared of going into Toronto and winning. The home court environment is tremendous. Raptors fans, you're amazing. You really are. But teams aren't scared of facing them there because they saw what the Nets did last year. They know that no matter what, they can be in the game at the end, the Raptors' execution may not be good enough for them to hold on. Wall is going to be able to get to the rim. Beal is going to be able to get to the rim.
That's the thing. Wall is going to feast in this series.
I love Wall on Lowry. I really like that.
That's kind of a tough thing, too, that makes me think about going back to the Wizards. Is just like, there is that thing of, who's the best player? Well, it's John Wall. And it's, I love Kyle Lowry, but I don't think it's very close.
Who's the second best player?
Kyle Lowry.
Kyle Lowry. Who's the third best player? DeMar?
I guess so.
It's like DeMar, it's either DeMar or Gortat, I suppose.
Yeah.
By the way, the Wizards really aren't getting enough credit. Wall and Gortat were actually originally on my list of defensive duos in the league. Their numbers are amazing, and I actually started watching a lot of Wizards defensive video the last couple of weeks. And Gortat is really underrated in pick-and-roll coverage. He's very good.
Oh, he's mobile.
So when Lowry gets that switch on him, he'll win a lot of them, but you're just trying to chip away at the possessions. Meanwhile, Like, I look at the formula. Okay, the Wizards' formula is terrible. They go for these stupid mid-range jumpers and all these things. But I look at their personnel, and I'm like, all right, you're relying on Paul Pierce to hit big shots, for Bradley Beal to come off and hit mid-range jumpers because you don't want him shooting threes because you're an idiot. You want Gortat to score inside and then Nate to stretch the floor a little bit and for John Wall to make plays. I like that. What do you want for the Raptors? Well, Kyle Lowry needs to take everything on, go 1-on-5 and score. DeMar DeRozan needs to hit his mid-range jumpers fetish because he can't stretch out to three. You need James Johnson to not get called for the 700 charges calls that he's probably going to pick up in the series. Oh, and you need Lou Williams to be able to draw fouls at an absolutely obscene rate and for Gravis Vasquez to hit trailer threes. You need those things in order to score.
I don't understand what your Lou Williams thing is with the fouls.
Here's my thing. Is
you seem fine with Kevin Martin drawing horrible calls, but you get angry about Lou Williams.
I don't think he draws horrible fouls. Let me restate that. I don't think that's like he just gets bailed out in these. But like no, like Lou Williams is awesome at this. Like he's really good at drawing calls, and if he continues to do them in the series, if he can pick up calls on, on Bradley Beal, on Rasul Butler, on if he gets switched onto a three, if it's Otto Porter or Pierce, if he can do that and he can, then the Raptors have a great chance of winning the series. They have a great chance. I do not feel at all like I am 100% confident in the Wizards winning this series. I think it's a coin flip. It's why I took Wizards in seven. I took Wizards in seven because they're on the Raptors' home floor, and we've seen what the Raptors do at home in close situations. But anyway.
Wow. Is this series more Raptors versus Wizards or Raptors versus you?
It's a little bit Raptors versus although the good fans have actually really have come around in the last month and been like, you were very right about our team, and I'm very sorry for the things I said about you. And I've been like, you still have a chance. Like, you're still good. Like, I thought they were going to get the three seed. I was convinced, you know? Yeah. I really was. I was convinced they were going to get the three seed. He's up to 34% shooting on three. He was at 33, I think, like 2 weeks ago. So, like, 34% is acceptable. And it's not like there's not a massive difference between 33 and 34, but it is better. And so, like, that's good. And he does take a lot of threes, and that's good. And he shoots 40. You know how I am with gunners that shoot 40% from the floor. You know how I am with these guys.
Yeah.
If Lou was like a creator and a good defender, I wouldn't have any problem with him. I would be like, no, he's like a real plus. But to me, he's a questionable defender. He doesn't necessarily. He's not a playmaker in any sort of meaningful way. He's not a good rebounder, and he's very much a weakness defensively. So all he's really doing is hitting what are oftentimes insane threes and drawing a lot of fouls. And maybe that he'll wind up doing that because I've gone in and been like, this can't hold up. And then it's held up before.
Well, that is the tricky thing with a guy who draws a lot of fouls going into the playoffs. You don't know that it's going to hold up.
Because the comparison is Harden. My whole thing is I'm just like, yes, but Lou Williams does not have James Harden's reputation.
Right.
James Harden's going to get some calls. He's the MVP. He's an MVP candidate. I don't necessarily know if Lou Williams is going to draw a lot of those respect calls, no matter how long he's been in the league. And you know what sucks about this, though, is I need to back off because I actually like respect so much the fact that Lou was able to come back from injury. Like that's like he came back and had this amazing year. Like that's really great. Like he's really easy to love. It's just here was the line when I started to realize how much they depend on him. I like guys like that, and it's like he can make plays for you and swing a playoff game or a series. Versus Lou Williams better step up and have a massive series, otherwise they're in big trouble. That to me, I'm like, you shouldn't have to rely on guys like Lou Williams. Lou Williams should be, you need him to have a few good games, not he better help carry your offense.
Yeah, but it's a flawed team. Yeah. So then when you have a flawed team, like I don't think
anyone's... But then I'm like, they're a flawed team.
Right, but so is Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, both teams have glaring flaws. I think for, like, if you're talking about the Raptors as a title contender, yeah, that's absurd.
Right.
They're not getting past the second round if they even get past the first round. So if you want to judge them on title contender status, I think everything you're saying is right. If we're just talking about this team as like, hey, it's a playoff team that could win a first round, I think it's a little overly harsh because their opponent has the exact same flaws, it's just on the opposite side.
I know, and I totally agree. And it's like, I come across this certain way, but really, if the Raptors win the series, I will not be surprised.
They are, it's impressive that they're still an incredible offensive team. They put up points. And maybe it's because of a foul rate that isn't sustainable, but it's not like I don't even think it's a crazy foul rate. They're like eighth.
Lou Williams is number one in the league, I think.
Yeah, but I'm just talking like as a team.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle Lowry can draw fouls. DeMar DeRozan can draw fouls. Like, they have guys who can get to the line.
It's true. Yeah, so like, look, there's everything that can work. I just happen to think, I guess part of it is, I like the Wizards best versus the Raptors best. If the Wizards play down to their average level of performance, then the Raptors are going to win this series because the Raptors are better, and that's why they won more games. But I look at the Wizards best, I think they have a higher playoff gear than what Toronto has. And, you know, a lot of that's, you know, it's the if test. It's based off of the kind of formula for the playoffs. It's based off of last year's performance. And I may be drastically overrating last year's performance, and that's one thing I am concerned about. So don't think at all that I'm, like, I will not be shocked at all if the Raptors were to win this thing. And even to win it in six games wouldn't shock me. Like, I that's very reasonable. Five would be like, wow, the Wizards really fell apart. But Toronto is a very good team. Their personnel is where I start to get concerned.
It is an interesting concept in terms of, like, I agree with you. I think if the Wizards played their best, it's better than the Raptors' best. That might also be because we haven't seen the Raptors' best since December.
Right.
And so maybe that's coloring my perception a little bit. But it does get into this thing of, like, all right, you have a Raptors team that's very good offensively and horrible defensively. And you have a Wizards team that's horrible offensively and very good defensively. What do you trust more in the playoffs? And normally I would trust the defense more. And I think it is just like, well, it's the coach. I got to admit that Whitman is coloring my vision here. But it is also the home court advantage. You know, the Wizards have not been a very good team on the road this year.
True.
And so I think that, you know, that's a little bit, you know, in the Raptors' favor. It's not like the Raptors are these world beaters at home. We might be in like an Oracle situation here where we talk about, oh, because the atmosphere is so loud, that means it's a great home court advantage.
Right.
And that's not always the case. You know, teams, after the 2007 We Believe Warriors, it was this, oh, Oracle Arena, home court advantage for sure. And that year it was. After that, it really wasn't. Like, they were good at home, but it wasn't this insane advantage for them. And we may be that way with the Raptors right now in the Air Canada Center. It's like, just because something's loud doesn't mean it matters. I'm not saying the Raptors fans don't matter and they can't make that crazy. It's just, it clearly didn't rattle a veteran Nets team last year. This Wizards team's a little bit younger. So maybe it comes into play more against this team, but I don't know. John Wall didn't seem like he gets rattled.
Yeah, no. I think it will be interesting because I will say I have real concerns about Kyle Lowry in key situations. His turnover rate, his numbers in clutch situations are good. It's when it's anecdotally that I'm like, I keep remembering these instances when I'm like, oh, he turned it over again. Like, I was like, there were three times a season when it was a close game and I was like, wouldn't it be funny if Lowry turned it over here? And then he did.
And he does force some really bad shots in those situations. Mm-hmm. He can hit them, but he does force some really bad ones. I'm going to throw a question at you for each series.
All right.
Hawks-Nets. Who's the best player for the Hawks in this series? Like, who ends up being the best player for the Hawks?
That's a great question. Jeff Teague.
Ooh, I like that. You like some playoff Teague.
I love me some playoff Teague. Yeah. I live for playoff Teague. And he is such a better defender than people give him credit for, and he's going to give Darren a world of hurt.
What do you think Kevin Love averages in the series against the Celtics?
14-8.
Ooh, 14-8. Okay. I was going to go 15-11.
It's really good. I think 14-8 is really good for a playoff series. It would not shock me if he had huge numbers because not only you could definitely see Blatt being like, now I will use you, but also,
I've destroyed your confidence all year, and now I unleash you on the world.
Rise! I could also see Kevin Love being like, oh, I'm going to make a statement just in case they want to make a bid in free agency so I can get the hell out of playing for this coach.
That'll be interesting.
I can see that happening.
Yeah. Do the Bucks crack 95 in any game in the series?
Oh.
Just so you know, the most they scored was 95 in their four-game series with the Bulls this year. The other three games, they were under 90. Can they get one game where they crack 95?
I've seen so many random games where I'm like, oh, this will be a defensive slugfest, and then all of a sudden it turns offensive.
Well, yeah, like you could also see like O.J. Mayo could have one of those 8 three-pointer games, right?
No.
No?
I will say no.
All right.
I will say it will not happen. I will say if they're going to win this, if they're going to win these games, it's going to have to be 94-88.
Okay. I guess who ends up being the second best, or who ends up being the, who has a better series, DeMar DeRozan or Bradley Beal? Because we did see some things from Bradley Beal in the playoffs last year that kind of opened everyone's eyes.
DeRozan.
I think I agree.
Because I think DeRozan's going to do bad things to Beal defensively. DeRozan's a really good defender.
Does Terrence Ross show up?
He'll show up.
Not just physically.
He'll show up. I think he'll swing one of the games.
Okay.
I think he can swing one of the games.
Positively?
Positively.
Okay.
Positively.
All right. Should we jump over to a West podcast?
Yeah, I'll jump over to the West.
All right. Thanks for listening. Go click on the West podcast. And Matt, I guess talk to you in a minute.